Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Battles That Changed the World, Tet Offensive by Richard Wirth. So I'll read through this. And this is a Vietnam battle, offensive, which went right throughout Vietnam. And most people in the Australian military know about it because it was so significant. Okay, so chapter one. Lyndon Johnson was sworn in as president on November 22, 1963, following the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Mrs. Johnson left, and Mrs. Kennedy witnessed the oath in the cabin of the presidential plane. Now, what I was going to say here is that I was born on the 23rd, as President Kennedy was being assassinated. So that gives you an idea of my era. And the era of this, so I would have been a small kid during this time. And how I'm born on the 23rd is Australia is around the dateline. So we're only a few hours from the dateline, so we're so many hours ahead. Okay, President Johnson's decision. Quote, all I would have gladly not to be standing here today, President Lyndon Johnson told the briefing Congress 5 days after the death of John F. Kennedy in Dallas, Texas. During the sorrow and uncertainty that flooded over the United States following Kennedy's assassination on November 22, 1963, President Johnson proved himself to be a strong, calming presence to soothe the troubled nation. Johnson's leadership skills had been honed over many years in politics as a congressman and later on as a senator for Texas. Senator Majority Leader, and finally Vice President of the United States. Now tragedy has thrust him into the very summit of power. Johnson wanted to be more than just a caretaker president holding America together until the next election, which is still a few years away. He hoped to distinguish himself as a great president. I just have finished reading The Devil, Tasmanian Devil, and this is a lot easier to read. I don't know whether more awake, whatever it is, or the text is larger. Over the next month, the president initiated a flood of domestic legislation that Washington had not seen since the days of Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal in the dark days of the Great Depression. They are actually quite complex sentences, aren't they? Johnson spearheaded a massive civil rights act which gave African Americans equal access to education and jobs. It's interesting how there's the core sentences and it's got an addition to it. The president launched a war on poverty aimed at providing job training and employment opportunities for America's poorest citizens. It's a simple sentence with a more complex system after it. Finally, he announced at the beginning of his great society a vast package of reforms, including free Medicare health insurance for the nation's elderly, extensive aid to education, a federal Head Start program for preschool children, enormous financial assistance to improve urban housing. By the time he was elected to a full term of president in 1964, Johnson had shown Americans that he was a dynamic, forceful leader. But looming over the Johnson's impressive legislative agenda was a problem thousands of miles away that would eventually threaten his entire presidency, Vietnam. As the president told the distinguished journalist Walter Lipson, the commitment that I inherited, I don't like, but how can I pull out? Johnson, predecessors Kennedy and Dwight Eisenhower had sent American advisors to South Vietnam to help support the weak regime against the attacks from his government in the north. Gradually, President Johnson escalated the war by bombing the north in 1964. Early in 1965, when American advisors were attacked in their barracks in Pekou, Johnson retaliated with more bombing, while he also began sending combat battalions and Marines to South Vietnam. By mid-1965, 60,000 American troops had been sent to Vietnam. The number grew to 383,000 by the end of 66. And would increase even more. From the outset, President Johnson had harboured serious reservations about becoming too involved in Vietnam. He was afraid the war would become like quicksand, trapping all Americans' resources. yet he also believed that American security around the world required a halt to the forces of communism in Southeast Asia. At first, the president tried to carry forward both the war in Vietnam and create the society at home, but the cost put too great a strain on the economy. Gradually, he was forced to scale back his domestic programs to pursue the war. At home, President faced increasing pressures, especially from many young people who were being drafted into the war. They saw no reason to leave America to fight and die in a country thousands of miles away. African-American leaders who had supported President Johnson's Great Society realized that it was being abandoned in favor of fighting a war. In 1967, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. spoke at an enormous demonstration in New York denouncing the Vietnam War. You can automatically see the a structure to the sentences here. It's sort of, each sentence has a payload of information, detail into it. It's quite good. Let's see the author. No, we don't. Let's see if you've got description of the author. Richard Wirth is 30 years' experience as a writer, trainer, and video producer. He's written more than 25 books, including The Four Levers of Corporate Change, a best-selling business book. And many of his books are for young adults on topics that include family living, foreign affairs, biography, history, and criminal justice system. So he does have a very formulaic, effective way of writing. In 1967, the Reverend Martin Luther Jr. King spoke to an enormous peace demonstration in New York, denouncing the Vietnam War. He spoke, what did he speak? So it was a small fact, and then rather than at an enormous, it would be Martin Luther King denounced the Vietnam War at a rally. They have to remember what he did and then how he did it. As President Johnson faced mounting opposition at home, in Vietnam the war was not going according to plan. Communist Viet Cong guerrillas supported by the regime of North Vietnam proved much tougher than the American leaders had ever imagined. Communists did not crack under the pressure of the powerful US war machine. Johnson and his advisers were already beginning to realize that they could not defeat the enemy. Yet the president was not prepared to leave in shame. He saw the attacks by the communist North as a vicious illegal aggression and promised the American soldiers that they would sacrifice would not be in vain. "We shall never let you down," he told them in 66, "nor your fighting comrades, nor the 15 million people of Vietnam who are counting on us to show here. Here in Vietnam, that aggression doesn't pay and that aggression can't succeed." And that America got painted as a true aggressor, didn't they? By the end of 1967, the war had reached a stalemate. It's a beautiful structure of sentences. Neither the communists nor the army of South Vietnam, with the help of the Americans, were winning the war. Indeed, there seemed no end in sight to the conflict. Polls were showing that the Americans who had first supported the president now had turned against him. They thought the war had become far too costly, especially in the face of more pressing problems at home. By June 1967, fully two-thirds of the Americans said that they had lost faith in President Johnson's ability to lead the country. They also mistrusted the government, which Americans believed was not telling the truth about the real situation in Vietnam. While the reporters covering the war were writing that it had reached a stalemate, President Johnson and his advisers were still publicly saying that war could be won. But many American officers on the ground in Vietnam knew better. The war was not going their way. President Johnson was expected to run for re-election in 1968, but he was challenged by a leader who was the advocate of peace, advocating peace efforts, Democratic Senator Eugene McCarthy of Oregon. In the first Democratic primary held in New Hampshire in March, McCarthy almost beat the president. No one had expected such a result, but with his approval rating around 35%, the president realized that he had lost the confidence of the majority of Americans. On March 31, he spoke to the American people about the course of the Vietnam War and confirmed his commitment to stop bombing North Vietnam and open peace talks. Finally, at the end of his speech, President Johnson added, "I have concluded that I should not permit the presidency to become involved in partisan divisions that are developing in this particular year. Accordingly, I shall not seek and will not accept the nomination for my party for another term as your president." Well, the idea that the president was nonpartisan isn't amazing. The nation was stunned, but Lyndon Johnson had decided that only taking himself out of politics could he be an honest negotiator who was only interested in ending the war. A major event had brought President Johnson to his decision. It was the impact of a decisive military campaign that just ended on the battlefields of Vietnam, the Tet Offensive. Beautiful. It's beautiful the way it's written. The game had provided strength to the peace process and led the other Democrats to challenge Johnson's leadership. Tet had finally convinced the president the military victory of Vietnam was impossible. Chapter 2, The Land Conflict. There's a speech here. Workers are shown, "Bye, Sebastian. Do you want a lift?" A land conflict. Workers are shown harvesting tea in Indochina in the 1930s. They look to be having lots of fun. The story of the Tet Offensive began many centuries early in the history of Vietnam. Located in Indochina, historians have described Vietnam as a long, narrow bamboo pole with a basket of rice on either end. One basket in the north is the Red River Delta, where the city of Hanoi is located. Running southward, the peninsula bounded by China Sea on the east is a range of mountains on the west. In the south lies a second right basket formed by the Mekong Delta. In this delta lies another major city in Vietnam, one called Saigon. It is now known as Ho Chi Minh City. Isn't that beautifully put? I don't know how he does it. I wish I could write that one. Over 1,000 years, beginning at 100 BC, Vietnam was part of China. The Chinese tried to modernize the country. They built canals in the Red River Delta to reduce the amount of flooding which occurred each year during the summer monsoon season. Chinese also built roads, improved Vietnamese harbors, introduced principles of Confucianism. Confucius was a philosopher who developed a set of principles to guide Chinese society as well as government. Public officials, known as mandarins, followed the guidelines of Confucius in governing China and Vietnam. The Chinese introduced the religion of Buddhism into Vietnam. The Buddhist monks brought the teachings of Siddhartha Gautama Buddha, who emphasized the importance of spirituality and selflessness. That is interesting. How can a Buddhist be aggressive? I have to really read that a bit more. Vietnamese were never happy under Chinese rule, however, principally because the conquerors imposed burdensome taxes on the peasants who lived throughout the country. For 1,000 years, the Vietnamese periodically revolted and tried to remove Chinese rules, but each time they were unsuccessful. During the 10th century, the Vietnamese were finally successful in expelling the Chinese conquerors. A leader named Ngo Quyen proved to be more than a match for the Chinese. Although outnumbered by the Chinese forces, Nguyen Quyen devised a method of defeating them. In 938, he lured the Chinese into a battle along the Bang Dang River. Unknown to the enemy, Nguyen had ordered a metal spike sunk into the riverbed at low tide. When the water rose, the spikes were hidden. Nguyen Quyen drew the Chinese ships across the hidden spikes. Then at low tide, the Chinese began to lure them backwards. The enemy ships were pierced by the sparks and defeated. As a result of this battle, the Chinese rule ended. over most of the next 10,000 years, the Vietnamese would remain independent. The Chinese, however, continued to harass Vietnam and attempt to reconquer it in the 13th century. Chinese Emperor Kublai Khan set a navy against the Vietnamese, but the Chinese were again defeated in the Bash Dang River because they fell into the same trap that Nguyen Quyen had set for them. During the 15th century, the Chinese were more successful and briefly reasserted control of Vietnam. Once again, a patriot appeared named Lee Loy, who led a successful guerrilla campaign against the Chinese. at a decisive battle fought on the Red River Delta in 1426, Li Lo used elephants to terrify the Chinese cavalry and finally defeat them. Okay, there's a little section here called Vietnamese Patriots. During the early history of Vietnam, several courageous patriots led their people to revolts against the Chinese. In the first century AD, a woman named Trung Thach led a band of Vietnamese extricates in a revolution after the Chinese had murdered her husband. Joined by her sister Trung Nhi, they briefly established a Vietnamese kingdom. However, Trung's sisters were eventually overrun by a superior Chinese army. But instead of surrendering, they jumped into the river and drowned. During the 3rd century, a Vietnamese woman named Thieu Lu rode an elephant at the head of her soldiers, and she led them into battle against the Chinese conquerors. "I want to sweep the whole country to save the people of slavery," she said. However, she also failed to throw out the Chinese and eventually committed suicide. Another revolt broke out in 543 AD, led by the aristocrat named Li Bon. At first, Li Bon carried on a successful guerrilla war against the Chinese and even became emperor of Vietnam in 544. But 2 years later, the Chinese defeated him. Li Bon was captured and beheaded. Well, that's not too good. Over the next 400 years, Vietnam would be ruled by a series of local kings, but the country was often plagued by unrest and civil war. The kings generally tried to enrich their own followers. In the countryside, wealthy landowners controlled large estates while the peasants were forced to eke out a meager existence. Nevertheless, they were still heavily taxed by central government, which relied on the revenues to support a lavish lifestyle of the king. Meanwhile, the Vietnamese rulers began to encounter Western traders. During the 17th century, Portuguese arrived and helped with one powerful Vietnamese royal family in a civil war against another family. In the 17th century, the Dutch traders also appeared, followed by the French. In addition to traders, Catholic missionaries came to Vietnam. One of these missionaries was Father Alexander de Rhodes, who baptized thousands of Vietnamese and established a Catholic community in country. But Vietnamese emperors regarded the foreign missionaries as a threat to the rules and executed many of them. Although France's effort to gain a foothold in Vietnam were temporarily halted, France did not give up. During the 18th century, a civil war broke out in Vietnam. The French helped one side decisively defeat the other and establish a single unified kingdom in Vietnam in 1802. France also continued sending missionaries to Vietnam, although some of them were executed. In 1857, following the execution of a missionary, French Emperor Louis Napoleon decided to invade Vietnam. Gee whiz. In addition to protecting the missionary, Louis Napoleon hoped to establish a French colonial empire in Vietnam. By 1859, the French had taken Saigon and began to expand their control throughout the Mekong River Delta. Gradually, French power grew northwards until in 1853, Hanoi had also fallen. 73. French conquest of Vietnam was part of the 19th century imperialism. European nations, including Great Britain, Belgium, Germany, established large colonial empires in Africa and Asia. A primary purpose of these empires was to exploit the raw materials of the conquered territories. In Vietnam, for example, France exploited the large rice-growing areas of the Mekong River, Red River deltas. French planters were given huge plantations, which operated by using the labour of native Vietnamese peasants. The peasants lost their independence as they had their land taken over by the French. In addition, the French brought rubber trees into Vietnam. A large rubber plantation was established, which was owned by the wealthy planters and worked by Vietnamese peasants. The French government governed the country with a small bureaucracy. They were assisted by native Vietnamese bureaucrats and well-to-do landowners who were happy to cooperate with the French. In return, the French allowed them to retain their lands and share the revenues collected from the peasants. Meanwhile, the French did not create any industries in Vietnam. They wanted the country to be a market for French manufacturers back in Europe. Any local industries would only provide cheap competition. During the 1880s, some Vietnamese resorted to familiar strategies to deal with foreign invaders. They created a guerrilla war. The guerrillas established their bases in the mountains of Vietnam. During the night, they would infiltrate villages to disrupt French control. Guerrillas would also try to recruit soldiers among the peasants, who were dissatisfied with French rule. The French proved too powerful for the guerrillas, using a combination of superior weapons to support amongst the local Vietnamese who had profited from French rule. France finally defeated the guerrilla movement during the 1890s. The peace was short-lived. In 1907, there was a new revolt, which was organized by a resistant leader called Phan Bo Châu. He successfully carried out a plot which French army officers were poisoned by Vietnamese soldiers who served underneath them. However, the leaders of the revolt were discovered. Pan was forced to flee the country. Shortly afterwards, another revolt was led by a Mandarin named Pan Chu Trinh, but he was captured by the French and imprisoned. Later, Pan Chu Trinh was pardoned and allowed to immigrate to France. There he continued to speak out against the French. Pan collected a small group of supporters, who included a young man named Nguyen Thach Thanh. Pan had attended a college in Vietnam and planned to become a government bureaucrat, but after becoming dissatisfied with French rule, he left Vietnam and went to Paris. Pan supported himself there by working as a photographer finisher. He soon became soon he was to become leader of the Vietnamese resistance and changed his name to Nguyen Choc, a patriot. At the Paris Peace Conference of 1919, at the end of World War I, Nguyen delivered a petition asking French European powers to grant Vietnam its freedom. The petition was immediately rejected, but Nguyen did not give up his efforts to free Vietnam from French rule. During the 1920s, Nguyen joined the French Communist Party. He travelled to Moscow, where he studied at the Lenin School of Oriental Peoples. Eventually, Nguyen returned to Asia, where he began to build a local communist organisations. In 1930, he became leader of the Vietnamese Communist Party. Nguyen had become convinced the only communist princes could offer Vietnamese successful alternatives to the French rule. During the 1930s, Nguyen led revolts against the French rule. He received the support of many peasants whose economic miseries had grown even worse because of worldwide economic depression. Communists offered the peasants land, which would be taken from the wealthy plantation owners as well as the end taxes. At first, the communist-led results were successful, but the French retaliated with enormous military power and rapidly crushed the communists. Nguyen Al Coc was arrested among his supporters, including Vo Nguyen Gap. There were rumours that Nguyen Al Coc had been killed, but he actually escaped from prison and returned to Moscow. During the 1930s, the French continued to rule Vietnam. By 1939, the situation was changing. World War II had begun. The following spring, the Nazis conquered France. The communists still remaining in Vietnam seized the opportunity to result, but the French were too powerful for them and quickly put down the uprising. While the communists were easy to overcome, the French forces were no match to even more powerful enemy Japan. The fertile rice-producing areas Vietnam looked very attractive to the Japanese, who had wanted rice to feed their armies. In 1941, Japan had taken control of Vietnam, although the French were allowed to handle the day-to-day governing of the country. Wow. Nevertheless, France would take Japan would take so much rice from Vietnam that the Vietnamese people suffered a severe famine. Meanwhile, Nguyen Al Coc and Vo Nguyen Gap returned to Vietnam. They had the support of many Vietnamese peasants as well as a large segment of the middle class that detested the Japanese rule. In 1941, Nguyen Al Coc, this is amazing that the French, how did that happen? They established Viet Minh, the Vietnamese Independent League. The Vietnamese began to organise a guerrilla campaign against the French and Japanese. It's hard to know that the French were collaborating with the Japanese. Amazing. The Chinese Nationalists, led by the President Chiang Kai-shek, were already battling against the Chinese Communists, led by Mao. This is in World War II. I don't understand this. Mao Zedong for control of China. Chiang Kai-shek did not want communists to take control of it now, nor did some Vietnamese political leaders who mistrusted the communists. Nguyen was arrested and taken to China. Eventually, he was allowed to leave prison after agreeing to lead guerrilla forces against the Japanese. By this time, Nguyen had changed his name to Ho Chi Minh to escape attention of the French and the Japanese government of Vietnamese. So this is Nguyen. Gee whiz. From 1943 to 1945, Ho Chi Minh led the Vietnamese against the Japanese. The Vietnamese received help from the American Special Forces, US bombing raids. In 1945, Japan finally ended the French government in Vietnam. The Japanese declared that they would govern the country, but the government lasted only a few months following the dropping of the atomic bombs of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Japan surrendered, ending World War II. So, how does that work? France collaborates with the Japs. It really hurts my head to even think of it. At this point, Vietnam found itself the only major force in Vietnam. On September 7, 1945, Ho Chi Minh declared that Vietnam was independent. He put it, put it to a large paragraph in Hanoi, Vietnam has a right to a free and independent country, and in fact, it is already so. But France and the United States had no intention of allowing Ho Chi Minh to establish an independent communist state in Vietnam. And Vietnamese were not powerful enough to oppose the military power of the United States. With the American support, French troops returned to Vietnam to assert control of the country. However, Vietnamese was growing. Ho Chi Minh had, and his military commander, General Vo Nguyen Quoc, vowed that the French would eventually be driven out of the country. They began a guerrilla campaign which achieved to achieve their goals. As the communists gained support amongst the peasants in the countryside, the French rapidly found that they were able to control the urban centres such as Hanoi. Nevertheless, French leaders were convinced that that with the US support they could hold the colony. In 1954, the French army had fortified a position in northern Vietnam called Dien Bien Phu. I only know that because I couldn't read the words there. The French base was located in a valley, and they hoped to lure the Vietnamese into an area, then defeat the enemy with superior weapons. The French were convinced that Gap and the Vietnamese had no artillery, and that they could not bring it to the rugged hills that surrounded Dien Bien Phu. But Gap fooled them and laid siege to the French position. Superior communists overran the French positions and eventually shut down the airfield. The French had planned to use the airfield to keep the army supplied through airlifts. Meanwhile, the steady rains and monsoons turned the French positions at Dien Bien Phu into quagmire. Finally, on the 7th of May, French surrendered to General Gap's forces. It was a victory as important as the Battle of Bat Chang in 938 AD. Ho Chi Minh was confidently expected that the Western powers would now leave Vietnam. But the United States was not ready to allow the entire country to fall to communist orbit. Soviet forces had already established communist satellite governments in Europe. In China, communist forces of Mao Zedong had taken control of the country and ousted the Chinese nationalists. American policy experts believed in the domino theory. Communists must strictly be contained, they wrote. In a shrinking world, the fate of each country is linked to that of all others. The real world is only as strong as the weakest link, and thus the fall of communism of any country threatens the security of the United States and the fate of the entire world itself. The Geneva Conference in 1954, Vietnam was divided into north and south sections along the 17th parallel. Ho Chi Minh ruled the north. In the south, the United States backed government, led by the Vietnamese Catholic name Ngo Dinh Diem. Unfortunately, Diem's policies were not much different from those imposed by the French. As a result, he was successful in controlling the cities of South Vietnam, but in the countryside, he was received with little support from the peasants. Nevertheless, he continued to receive financial aid from the United States because he hated the communists and refused to deal with Ho Chi Minh. Looks a real dork, this person. However, Diem's army in South Vietnam was unsuccessful in dealing with the growing communist guerrilla forces, Diem fighters, that were still living in the south. Diem called them the Army of Viet Cong. The Viet Cong was being supplied to the north of Vietnamese along a series of jungle roads that ran through the Laos and Cambodia, along known as the Ho Chi Minh Trail. Diem realized that he was losing the battle against the communists, and in 1963 seemed willing to negotiate with Ho Chi Minh. However, the United States did not want to negotiate. As a result, the United States permitted the South Vietnamese military to stage a coup against Diem, resulting in his death. Oh my God! By the time, the United States had committed 16,000 military advisers to the war. In addition, the United States was conducting bombing raids under the South Vietnamese village designed to root out the Viet Cong. Nevertheless, knowing the war was in sight, when President John F. Kennedy was assassinated in 1963, the policy of the United States in Vietnam was simply to assist the Vietnamese government in a battle to defeat the communists. That's the end of chapter two. It's getting worse, isn't it? The United States is such a horrible place, isn't it? Okay, we'll stop that here. As only 29 minutes, I'm up to chapter 3, page 27, and see how many pages this all up. And page 87. Only 60 more pages to go. Pretty short. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.